You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Imagine a hot August afternoon at Shea Stadium, the air thick with the smell of hot dogs and peanuts. The players are gathering in the locker room. The fans are filing into the stands. And inside a tiny closet-sized cubicle beneath the stands, A.J. Mass climbs into a polyurethane Mr. Met costume. Mr. Mass was team mascot for the New York Mets from 1994 to 1997. And these days, he writes about baseball for ESPN.com's Rumor Central. He's also written a memoir called Yes, It's Hot in Here, Adventures in the Weird, Woolly World of Sports Mascots. It's published by Rodale Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you? Good to be here.
So how hot was it inside the Mr. Med costume?
Well, it was so hot that we would actually, they would send me out sometimes to ticket events. And I remember January at Rockefeller Center, sitting outside, and everyone's in winter coats, and I'm just in the costume, and I was perfectly fine.
What else can you tell us about what it was like inside that costume?
It was really a unique experience because, you know, most people, when they interact with somebody, they make eye contact. And Mr. Met's eyes were not my eyes. They were about a foot above my actual eyes. So it was always...
Looking out the mouth?
I was looking out the mouth. And it was always interesting that I got very used to talking to people's necks.
But also, wasn't it more complicated at first? And they eventually simplified it.
Yeah. The original Mr. Met costume that they gave me was in conjunction with this theme park that they had opened up behind the outfield wall with Nickelodeon. And it was a Jim Henson-esque puppet creation. It had it fully went around me from top of my head all the way to below my knees, and there were puppet levers that could.
So it was like Big Bird.
Yeah, a little bit like Big Bird, and you would swing the arm around with one lever, and there was a tongue that I could shoot out the mouth, and the eyes rotated, and it wasn't very fan friendly. You couldn't really interact with anybody, but it looked great from a distance, and that's kind of what they were using it for the first couple of years that I was in the costume.
And then why did they decide to humanize it a bit?
Well, 1994, there was the strike, and that kind of put a kibosh on the theme park. The season ended early, and they realized no one was really going to this thing anyway. They kept Mr. Met around for one more season, and at the end of that season, I actually went to the team, and I said, look, I really love doing this. I'd like to stick around, but we need to change the costume. And to their credit, they did listen to me.
Well, the mascot had been retired by the Mets in the 1960s. Why did they decide to revive it? Was it because of the theme park?
That was part of it, but the reason for the theme park was because in 1993, the Mets were just awful. They lost 103 games, and there were so many PR hits that the team had taken. Vince Coleman was an outfielder at the time, and he threw some fireworks at a Los Angeles parking lot and injured a child.
He sure didn't live up to his salary.
No, he didn't. And Brett Saberhagen was like spraying bleach at reporters, and it was just a PR nightmare, and they needed to kind of clean that up a little bit and clean up their image, and Mr. Met was part of making it a more family-friendly environment at Shea.
Was it almost inevitable that you would get a job with the Mets? You grew up in Flushing.
It certainly was a dream of mine. I mean, I think like most kids who are baseball fans, they're like, oh, I'll be a major leaguer someday. And I thought I would play for the Mets someday. And then, slowly but surely, I realized that, my athleticism was not exactly up to major league levels. So I thought, well, maybe I'll be a broadcaster for the Mets. I'll announce the games. And I went to Syracuse and got a degree in broadcast journalism. And I thought that was my path. And suddenly I find myself auditioning to be part of this theme park, and I'm the mascot.
Well, how did you even hear about the job?
There was a lot of ads in the newspaper. They were really looking for people to do tour guide work, and I figured at very least I can do that. And after rehearsal one day, they said, we're thinking of bringing the mascot back. Anyone wants to stick around, stick around.
And then you auditioned for it. What did that
involve? It wasn't even an audition at that part. At that point, it was three guys showed up, and I fit the suit. I mean, it really was like kind of like a Johnny Bravo or the Brady Bunch kind of thing. Like, right place, right time, right size. If I had been a few inches taller, a few inches shorter, I probably wouldn't have gotten it.
And you talk about a moment of truth during that audition. You don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you realize that you...
you mean my reaction after the fact? Yeah, I just sitting there on the field at Shea Stadium, and I'm Mr. Met, and it's just like first thing I did is I went over behind first base and just stood where Buckner stood when the ball rolled through his legs, and I just kind of like soaked it all in and listened. I could hear Bob Murphy's call in my head, and it was just like, wow, I'm here. I'm here.
Now, in this book, you don't just talk about your own experiences, but you talk about other mascots, and you also look at the history of mascots. You trace them back to King Henry VIII or earlier?
Yeah, where do mascots come from was what, that, you know, I was the beneficiary of like, this history. Like, where did it come from? And there was a mascot history goes back to the Renaissance cards, the tarot cards, where there was a joker kind of card, and it was considered to have magical powers, this card. And, you know, throughout the course of the next few years, people took on this role. Like, the court jester kind of became this personification of this playing card, someone who was allowed to tell the king the truth.
Well, there had been clowns in baseball going all the way back to, the 20s and 30s. But one of the key figures in the story is Max Patkin.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, it would just be this kid would be sitting in the crowd and a player would be in a slump, see the kid smile, and he'd get a hit. And he's like, oh, that's my lucky charm. That's my mascot. You're going to stick around. But, you know, Max Patkin kind of became the first performer, someone who was hired by the team to actually entertain the crowd. And he had been a pitcher in a service league and gave up a home run to Joe DiMaggio. And he looked angry. He got angry and he started chasing him around the bases. But people realized he wasn't really angry at him. He was just mimicking his gait. And all of Joe DiMaggio's teammates came out of the dugout and slapped him on the back and said, way to go, Max. And he kind of put two and two together and realized, I got something here. And Bill Veeck saw him or heard of him and actually hired him as a coach, technically, on the books, but he was really just there to entertain the crowd.
And then other teams started picking up on that.
Yeah, other teams started picking up on that. And, you know, it really became, you didn't have to be this good luck charm. You actually had to do something and be a performer on the field in order to be the mascot.
Well, how long before the game did you get into the costume?
Well, I was usually there several hours before the game, greeting fans at the gates and walking around. So maybe 2 hours before the game, I would be there in costume, greet the fans as they came in for the batting practice. And I'd probably stay in the suit until the end of the first inning for my first run because, you know, you got all these interactions with the fans that you do.
And was that pretty much what you did, interact with the fans? Did you work out any routines for yourself?
Yeah, the Mets at that time didn't really want me to do a lot of routines. You know, they'd allow me to go on the field for the fifth inning with the grounds crew and kind of like do a little dance and to go on the dugout for the seventh inning stretch and kind of conduct, take me out to the ball game. But they didn't really want someone who was going to draw that much attention on themselves.
My guess is AJ Mass, his book, Yes, It's Hot in Here, Adventures in the Weird Woolly World of Sports Mascots. You say very early on that you became addicted to being Mr. Met.
Yeah, well, you know, you're in the costume and you're kind of getting all this, you know, Justin Bieber-esque attention. Like, everyone wants to take their picture with you and everyone's coming at you. And it's like, it's kind of like a drug. It's like an adrenaline surge. And you, once you're out of the suit, you're not getting that. So you kind of want to get back in the suit again and feel it all over again.
But people talked to you differently when you were in the suit.
They did. They treated me like I was a kindergarten student. Even people who knew who I was in the costume, who worked for the team, would go, now, Mr. Met, we need you to go to the upper deck this morning and visit the fans. Do you think you can handle that?
This is management?
This is management. These are people who knew who I was, knew I had a college degree, and knew that I didn't have to be talked to in that tone. But, I took it as a compliment on some level because I had created this character, and they were treating me like the character. But, you know, it also was a little bit annoying.
There are some work hazards involved. Can you tell us about the time Dave Raymond, who was the Philly fanatic, was in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah, well, the Philly fanatic kind of picks a section at random each game and kind of just, you know, shows up and like everyone, you know, you assume is a Phillies fan at that time and will come and embrace him. Well, one day he picked a section that was full of some drunk Mets fans and they were not happy to see Mr. Raymond. So they kind of just started giving him a beatdown.
Mets fans drank?
Can you believe it?
And did you have to deal with that when you were at Shea?
Yeah, not only Mets fans who drank, but, you know, living in New York, you don't just have the fan base of one team. You have Yankee fans who just didn't get around to going to the Yankees when they were home. They came to Shea just to, you know, harass the Mets. And I was the personification of the Mets, so I would certainly get that side swipe from behind quite often.
Another hazardous time was when you had to deal with the Secret Service on April 15th, 1997, when President Bill Clinton came to watch the anniversary of Jackie Robinson's first Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, they were retiring his number, and Bill said, I'd like to go to the game. So, like, overnight, the place was transformed from normal barren Shea to you know, it looked like LaGuardia Airport. There were all these metal detectors and cops with wands, and you couldn't go from point A to point B without checking these all these checkpoints. And Mr. Met's head didn't fit through the gates and had a little metal in it, so it set them off when he did go through. And NYPD thought it was hilarious, and the fans were gathering a crowd, but Secret Service was like, we don't really like the commotion. So the officer said to me, the Secret Service guy says, Mr. Met, go about your business. No one will bother you anymore. But there are snipers all around the ring of the stadium. Approach the president. We go for the kill shot.
You.
Yeah, me. And he was looking right into the mouth.
So you never met Bill Clinton?
No, never did. Never. Mr. Met did, but a few years later, but not me.
You you say that there's mascot etiquette. What are the rules of being a good mascot?
Generally speaking, mascots are not supposed to talk. Mascots are supposed to maintain this illusion of muteness, because it's a cheat, really, to be able to, you know, say, hey, buddy, how are you? To be able to show your emotions just through small body language changes and everything, I think is just, you know, it's just better performance. And I think most mascots do stick to that kind of rule.
Although you tell about B.J. Birdie, the mascot of the Toronto Blue Jays, breaking the etiquette.
Yeah, and he actually owned the costume, so he had a little more freedom to do what he wanted. And, he would just walk around like, hey, everybody, it's me, B.J. Birdie. Look, oh, there's Mr. Met over there. Oh, my goodness. And just nonstop. And like, I'm walking over here. I'm walking over there. I'm walking over there. And it just was not only annoying, but it also kind of showed us up a little bit, because we couldn't talk. And people were like, why can't you talk? It didn't make us look too good.
Well, then there were others you liked even less. You really didn't like the San Diego Chicken, Ted Janulis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all props to what he did on the field. He's a brilliant performer, and without him, you know, blazing the trail, there probably wouldn't have been a Mr. Met. So I appreciate him as a performer. But outside of the suit, it's me, me, me. Look at me, look at me. He came and did one game with me, but he was telling me what to do. You go over there, and then you do this, and you do this. And I was like, dude, this is my house. What are you doing? And I interviewed so many other mascots, and not a one had any different to say about him.
One of the recurring themes in the book is that mascots feel like they're not really members of the team. You don't go to team building exercises. You aren't allowed to change in the locker room with the players. You say some of the players didn't recognize you outside of the stadium. Do you think that mascots should be included more in the team?
I don't necessarily think...
Because they do represent the team to the fans.
I think the teams that get it and actually, you know, nurture the mascot relationship take that step and introduce the mascot to the players. And, you know, when they're going on these charitable events, say like, oh, and here's the guy who's doing it. I think you do build that camaraderie. But when it's just, hey, there's somebody in this suit, I don't think the players will trust that you're not trying to steal their spotlight. And I think that just builds in this air of mistrust.
Well, you describe having some tense relationships with the Mets management.
Yeah,
we didn't get along very well. What was the problem? What were you doing that annoyed them?
I don't think it was anything that I was doing that annoyed them. I just don't think they understood what it was to be a mascot. I think they looked at it as, AJ's in the costume for an hour and a half and he wants a break. I can sit and watch a game for an hour and a half and I don't need a break. So what gives? Why is he being so lazy? They'd never been in the suit. They didn't realize that I probably had lost 12 pounds and was dehydrated. And
Now you're thin.
Exactly. I didn't have much to lose. Exactly. But, this was kind of their attitude. Was like, you know, after a 16-game homestand, I'd say, oh, I'm going to take a day off. Like, well, we're not taking a day off. Like, well, yeah, but you haven't been doing what I've been doing.
And then they fired you by email?
I received an email from my supervisor, and it basically said, we've hired somebody else. And then a week later, I got another email from somebody else on the team asking me when I would be at this appearance 2 weeks hence. And it was just like, they weren't even communicating with each other, management. And
do you know why Kerry Castor sent you that email?
I don't know why.
Did he give you a reason?
Not really. He apologized for it and said, you know, I probably should have picked up the phone and called you, after all you've done for the team and everything. But I later found out that he actually hadn't hired anybody at that point. He was only planning on hiring somebody. So, I don't know what kind of motivations they had behind the scenes, but there was certainly some politics going on that I didn't know about.
And it left you kind of bitter. For a while, you said you couldn't watch Mets games?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to watch games anyway, just because I always feel like I have to be doing something. After you're in the suit, you know, you watch baseball differently and you just feel the rhythms. And so there's that anticipation of where should I be, where should I be? But yeah, I just didn't want to watch the team. I didn't want anything to do with them for a good 2 years at least.
Is being a baseball mascot something that young people should aspire to?
I think it's something that anyone who is a performer should aspire to, because it really is fully immersing yourself in a character in a way that other roles you just don't get the opportunity to do. But you really need to be a baseball fan. I think if you're going to do it without understanding the ebb and flow of the natural course of the game, you're not going to do a good job at it.
AJ Mass writes about baseball for ESPN.com's Rumor Central, also contributes to the site's coverage of fantasy sports, and his previous book was about fantasy sports. This one is about the reality of being inside a terribly hot costume. It's called Yes, It's Hot in Here, Adventures in the Weird Woolly World of Sports Mascots, published by Rodale. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.